Welcome back to On the Fly. I'm Mark Dowie, talking today with economist Robert Wright. I'd like to come back to your undying, unflinching optimism. That's something I've always admired about you, and I'd just be curious to know what it's really based on.
It's based on a lack of any choice, honestly, because once you become cynical about the possibilities for change, they win. That's what they want. They want progressives to become cynical. And once we allow ourselves to think that nothing can really change, then we are completely defeated. We don't have a chance. So my optimism comes from just a sense that it's the only way I can live.
As a student of American history, you must find reason it's in our history to be optimistic.
Oh, of course. I choose to find reasons in American history. I mean, I tell a story to myself and anybody who will listen that this country is fundamentally a story of widening opportunity and equality, that it's fundamentally a progressive story. If you begin with the Civil War right up through the progressive changes of the 1900 to 1915 era, right up through the New Deal, and then continue right after the Second World War. Even under Dwight Eisenhower, you know, who nobody would accuse of being a socialist, you had a 91% marginal income tax rate on the highest income earners, a national highway act that created the biggest infrastructure project in history, National Defense Education Act. We did amazing things. And then the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the whole civil rights movement. And then our willingness to accept error and get out of that tragedy called Vietnam. And then much of at least the progressive story of the last 25 years, which I would begin telling with environmental protection. I think that we got serious about the environment. We did some great things. I mean, even to the extent that smoking is not acceptable any longer in public places or in many private places. You know, even to the extent that most people these days are offended by racist or anti-Semitic or sexist comments. I mean, think of the progress politically and sociologically that represents.
I remember the day or the day after you had decided to support Barack Obama in the election. And I didn't ask you at the time, because you seemed almost shaken up by your decision, I didn't ask you at the time how it would affect your friendship and relationship with your dear old friend Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. Has it affected that relationship?
I don't think so. I saw the President Clinton a couple of months ago, and we had a good conversation. I think that they are professional politicians, and professional politicians hold grudges when it's useful for them to hold grudges, and they don't when it's not useful. Frankly, I'm such a small fish in the pond. It's not useful for them to hold grudges. You know, on another level, Mark, I mean, I think there's a great deal of mutual respect between me and the former President Clinton, but we did lock horns on several occasions when I was Secretary of Labor and after that point. And so that I wouldn't say that there is the same degree of personal friendship, or maybe I should say this slightly differently. There's personal friendship, but there's a degree of distance because of our understanding that we may feel differently about some important issues.
You are a little to the left of the president.
Well, to the extent that all these things can be measured on one linear scale, going from right to left, I suppose I am. But I don't think they are. I think that we've succumbed in this country to a very simplistic notion of political values. You know, it's like a ruler. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I've seen the so-called political center of this country move to the right, if you want to be simplistic about it, over my lifetime. My values right now, I believe, are the centrist values of the 60s and early 1970s. I've just stayed put. A lot of people have moved to they've left me, but I haven't moved in any particular direction.
I don't know about you, but I'm really confused by the Tea Party because they are an anti-government party, very vocally anti-government, but they're also very pro-corporate at a time when the corporations are supporting and establishing so much control over government and government policy. I mean, and I guess the other thing about the Tea Party that I wonder what you think is this just another right-wing populist spasm that comes along during a recession? They seem to happen in American history. The Farmers Party, the People's Party, the Know Nothing Party. This has happened before. Is there anything different about the Tea Party today that alarms you more than previous right-wing populisms?
No, I think it's a little bit of all of the above. That is, part of the Tea Party is pro-corporate because they are, frankly, financed by big corporations and by the Koch brothers and oil interests and Dick Armey's Freedom Works and so forth. I mean, they are part of the establishment Republican Party masquerading as being anti-establishment. Now, another part of the Tea Party, however, I think is very populist, and I think that they were put off. Put off is really an understatement. They were outraged by the bailout of Wall Street, and what they concluded from that is you can't trust big business, you can't trust Wall Street, but you can't trust big government either, because a government is going to be in cahoots with business. Inevitably, a government is going to be bailing out big corporations. And so this element of the Tea Party, which is very populist, is not that far removed from some people on the left. In fact, one of my pet dreams, which probably will never come to fruition, is that this element of the Tea Party and people on the left do get together and say, hey, we have a lot in common. Then, thirdly, there is an element of the Tea Party which is pure anger. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the old, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. It's born of stagnant wages and a sense that nobody cares, taxes that are going up. The tax revolts in this country, Mark, that started in the late 70s, started not because people dislike government. They started because in the late 70s, the median wage started to stagnate and families could not afford to pay more taxes. Instead of talking about taxes as the responsibility of the rich to pay their fair share, Democrats began getting defensive about government. I mean, what Democrats should have done and what they must do now is say, in effect, the only way we can finance what is necessary, your education, our roads, our bridges, everything else, is if the rich, the very rich, who have had the lion's share of the increase in income and wealth over the last 30 years, they must start paying their fair share.
What's on your nightstand right now? What are you reading these days?
I'm reading a book about the Comanches. Wonderful, wonderful book about the great Comanche Indian tribe that was... They actually did some atrocious things to other Indians and to white settlers, but obviously we wiped them out. I've always been interested in the period of time between 1805 and 1880, the period of manifest destiny, starting with the Louisiana Purchase. Lewis and Clark and the settlers who pushed west. I think it was a remarkable, very tragic, in some ways very exciting period in American history.
I understand you're writing plays.
I love writing plays, and I've done it since I was about 12 years old. Almost none have ever been actually produced. When I was in college, several were produced, and I loved it. I wrote a play called Public Exposure, a kind of political farce, which had its premiere on Cape Cod a few years ago, and then it had its West Coast premiere in Santa Rosa. I'm not proud of it. I mean, it's really a silly play, but it's a comedy. It's a farce. It was pretty, sold out crowds, and the runs were extended both on Cape Cod and in Santa Rosa. But I remember I was in the parking lot after one performance, and some late middle-aged lady came up to me, and she said, did you write that? And I said, yes. And she said, don't you have anything better to do with your time? It wasn't the highest compliment I've ever got. I'm doing a new play right now, which is much more serious, and it's about political and economic ideology. I'm not going to tell you what it's about the characters right now, because they're still forming in my head, and I find it's like novelists who write fiction. You just can't talk about it before it's done, but it's something I love to do.
Well, thank you, Robert. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mark.
You've been listening to On the Fly, a production of Talking Point Radio. I'm your host, Mark Dowie.
On the Fly was produced and directed by Blue Egg Media. Blue Egg Media incubates media futures and produces persuasive narratives for national and international media networks.